Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you stay up and watch the Oscars right to the end last night? If you're up at 11 o'clock, you saw That Song, Jai Ho from Slumdog Millionaire, win Best Song at the Oscars last night. New York Times columnist Frank Rich is our first guest today. And considering the Oscar outcomes last night, we will definitely talk about Frank's column, Slumdogs Unite, from a couple of weeks ago, and yesterday's on why we can say the F word, foreclosure, but find it so hard to utter the N word, nationalization. Hey, Frank, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. It's good to talk to you again. You related our attraction to Slumdog Millionaire to the fall of Tom Daschle from the Obama cabinet. What's the relationship?
Well, I think that, it's been fascinating to follow the emergence of Slumdog Millionaire throughout this season. From the moment I saw it months ago, before it really caught on, I was convinced that this might happen. And before the Tom Daschle mini scandal too, I think that it taps into this sense that Americans have that the system is gamed and fixed by people in power, and that we're all sort of manipulated by it. Populism, if in the broadest sense. One of the key elements of the movie, I think, beyond the romance and the gangster part and the Mumbai part of it, is at the heart of it is a very Western game show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is presented as being quasi-corrupt, if not outright corrupt, as it tries to stand in the way of this kid winning his jackpot. And I think that, in some ways, taps into an emotion we all feel. With Tom Daschle, I felt the problem was with him was less that he didn't pay his taxes than what the taxes were on, a chauffeur and a driver, a connection with that moneyed world of power in Washington once he left government, some of which involves, of course, some of the health care groups that would have been under his purview in the cabinet. And I think people are sick of it. And I think Washington has been slow to realize it, including the Obama administration. They didn't quite understand that the Daschle thing would blow up so quickly, but it did. I think even among Americans who really didn't know who Tom Daschle was,
right.
It just smelled.
Maybe Daschle should have won Best Supporting Actor for acting like he supported tax hikes on the rich while actually avoiding his own.
Ha, ha, ha. I like that.
But again, you see the rage over Daschle as part of something bigger than him or than taxpayer bonuses to failing CEOs. You write bigger than the Obama phenomenon itself. So do you think populist rage is really trumping Obama hope right now?
I think that people still feel, and understandably so, a great deal of hope about Obama. But I think that's a testament to him more than what's actually going on. And it could sour quickly if there isn't a feeling that he is really bringing about some kind of real New Deal. I think there's a lot of support for the stimulus package that was passed, and pretty much for almost everything he's doing, but he's fighting a culture that is bigger than he is, and that in some ways has had some inroads in his administration. You know, there are a lot of sort of Robert Rubin, Citibank type apparatchiks that have ended up in Treasury, and we just don't know that some of these people in the 1990s and the Clinton years were involved in a lot of the deregulation that has helped fuel this mess, and whether Obama can rise above it in both parties, this sort of Phil Graham
country
culture,
of whiners.
It remains to be seen.
We have Frank Rich with us as our first guest on the Brian Lehrer Show today. New York Times columnist Frank Rich, who some of you may remember used to be the chief theater critic for the Times. So we'll continue to talk some Oscars.
Sure.
And continue to talk some of his political columns and the way he brilliantly weaves pop culture into politics. Before we get back to the movies or pop culture, this rage, the populism, I think it doesn't necessarily only go up, right? It goes up to the CEOs and their bonuses when they're failing and taking taxpayer money. It goes up to Tom Daschle. I wonder if you think it applies to the rage in some quarters over the foreclosure relief bill. Did you hear that rant?
I did, that guy on CNBC.
On CNBC. We're going to play that later for another guest. But the rant is against individual homeowners who supposedly were irresponsible because they didn't pay their mortgages, you know, juxtaposed against those of us who do pay our mortgages or can afford to pay our mortgages as being more responsible.
Well, I think that's right. I wouldn't want to overemphasize this CNBC rant, which seems like sort of this 15 minutes of fame moment for this guy, who, of course, works in a business where there's also been people who behave badly and there's been a government bailout. Sure, there is a lot of anger against people who bought McMansions or mini McMansions, couldn't afford it, never could afford it, and they have to take personal responsibility for it. Can't all be blamed on unscrupulous lenders or governmental policy that helped this along. At the same time, people are also arguing against themselves because everyone went up. Many Americans went on a bender, not just in housing, but, you know, the credit card debt, which is now thought to be around $1 trillion, could be the next thing that could collapse, not least because there are all these derivatives tied to that debt that was sold by financial institutions, just as there were with the mortgage debt. So there's plenty of self-recrimination to go around.
Absolutely.
People can blame their neighbors. In the end, though, we're all in it together because, as the Obama administration is making the correct point, if half the people in your neighborhood or your development leave because of foreclosure or just abandoning their homes because they're underwater, your own property values collapse and your neighborhood can become a ghetto or a wasteland. So it's really a mess.
We have to take a break in 30 seconds and we'll continue with Frank Rich. Frank, in 30 seconds, what was your best picture of 2008?
Slumdog, I have to say. I liked it. For all its sentimentality, I just thought it was such a feast of movie making and touching. Not so much because of the politics of it, just as sort of virtuoso movie making by Danny Boyle. I just liked it in a visceral way.
And when we continue, we will talk more about politics and more about the Oscars. I liked the presentation last night, by the way. We'll wait till after the break to get your take on this, but I thought they did the Oscar show really well. A lot of good clips from the films, well-framed, suited for the times, I believe. But we'll talk about Frank Rich's columns in the New York Times, as well as movies, theater, and more when we continue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
You commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
Sean Penn accepting his Best Actor Award at the Oscars last night as we talk movies, theater, and politics with New York Times columnist Frank Rich. Frank Rich, you see that? Sean Penn, he got overtly political, and of course he played Harvey Milk.
Right, and it was a great performance, I have to say. It was one of his best performances, if not his best performance ever, in a good movie, I might add. And he certainly livened up the speech making a bit last night.
Did you think it was Dullesville other than that?
I found it, I have to confess, disagree with you. I did find it somewhat dull. Some of it is just built into the whole procedure. 2 hours before you really get to most of the major awards is rough. And Hugh Jackman seemed an odd choice to me. He's a perfectly talented entertainer, but it seemed he dropped in from another planet, which he had in a sense, Australia.
I agree with that. And he was nondescript.
He was nondescript, and the opening number bothered me, I guess. It was an attempt to try to have Hollywood embrace the issue of what's going on in the economy, but it seemed very much a Hollywood idea of how to embrace it. It didn't seem to work or be in tune with anything that's going on. It's not that they should come out and sing "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime," but there could have been more artful way. But you know, the show was what it is, and everyone knew that the best picture was going to be Slumdog Millionaire. So the amount of suspense was not the show's fault, the lack of suspense.
Right. I mean, I actually missed that opening bit, so maybe it was flat-footed. But I thought the speeches were entertaining but serious-minded for the most part. I liked the narration around the screenplay nominees as they showed the actors doing what the screenplay direction called for, you know?
Oh, I agree with you about all that. I thought the speeches were unusually good and also brief. The Heath Ledger, his family accepting that award was incredibly moving. I mean, you can't not be moved by that. Of course, I was immediately thinking, what if he had lost? But anyway, luckily he didn't. Yes, and some of those narrative devices and use of film clips were very creative and more creative than usual. And also having five presenters for the acting awards, although a little stagey at times and a little bit of a B team at times. I wonder where Jack Nicholson was. Was still better than usual.
Right. Still seeing Alan Arkin and Cuba Gooding up there together. That gave me some chills.
That was fun.
And I haven't seen the ratings, but you know, I'll bet the Oscars were well watched this year. I think it's been down in recent years, but it seems to me, and movies are doing well in general because it's a relatively cheap ticket. That the Oscar show, you know, watching the Oscars seems to fit the mood of the times pretty well. Stay home, hunker down with your loved ones, and you know, check out the clips from the movies you've seen.
I would think you could be right. It's certainly true about the movies in general. Award shows, though, have been down consistently the past few months, but I don't know what that means. It may mean that just too many of them and things like Golden Globes cut into the Oscars. We'll see, but you're absolutely right. People want to go to the movies. People want entertainment, particularly at a lower price.
Actually, maybe we can look that up. Maybe there are some overnight ratings we can look at. I'm telling my producer to check it out and see if we can get a quick comparison to last year's Oscar shows. Here's a little more of Sean Penn's acceptance speech, which he used to overtly make the case for gay rights and addressed the protesters against him and the movie Milk who were outside.
For those who saw the signs of hatred as our cars drove in tonight, and I think that it is a good time for those who voted for the ban against gay marriage to sit and reflect and anticipate their great shame and the shame in their grandchildren's eyes if they continue that way of support. We've got to have equal rights for everyone.
Does it matter?
Probably not. I think that I do... Look, it's a good thing that he is promoting equal rights for gay Americans, and certainly Milk itself, although not having an enormous audience, makes a very powerful case. Hollywood's a little guilty about this issue because the truth is it wasn't all that active prior to the balloting on Proposition 8, and the movie industry only sort of started to get its act together about this issue in a vocal way after it had already gone through,
really?
and that's been a continuing. I think people feel guilty about it. And Milk, of course, was released too late to make a difference in that specific vote. So now everyone's stepping up to the plate. But there's been a lot of internal soul searching in Hollywood. Where were the protests in favor of same-sex marriage before Election Day? People were preoccupied, of course, with the presidential race, but it got kind of short shrift even from that community.
So let's go from the Oscars to something else on television yesterday. Did you see all those governors on the Sunday talk shows?
It's hilarious. I mean, it's so out of touch. Republican governors, not all of them, obviously Charlie Crist is an exception down in Florida, but to see these governors for completely ideological reasons, say that they don't want relief in states like Louisiana, which are suffering so much, that they don't want to take this tainted government money. It's, you know, what planet are they living on?
And so hold it for just a second, because here, for people who didn't see it, is a short montage of governors disagreeing with each other about whether they'll even take all the money available to their states in the stimulus bill.
If it makes sense for Louisiana, makes sense for our taxpayers, we'll use those programs and dollars. If it doesn't, like on Friday, we said, this doesn't make sense for us. This is not a good deal for us.
I take it. I'm more than happy to take his money or any other governor in this country that doesn't want to take this money. I take it because we in California can need it.
There's some we will not take in Mississippi.
So you better believe I'm going to take every dollar that is coming to Michigan. I'll take their dollars too.
Our goal and aim is to make sure that we are making life easier and not harder for you during the time that we're here in Washington.
So we heard Bobby Jindal of Louisiana on Meet the Press, Schwarzenegger of California on ABC This Week, Haley Barbour of Mississippi, Jennifer Granholm of Michigan on Fox News Sunday, and the president from his toast at the governor's black tie dinner last night at the White House. And I guess, you know, Frank Rich, this ties into your column from last week.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that, about how you think some of the, you know, Republican rejectionists are living in the past.
I think there's like this cognitive dissonance. They're living in the past. First of all, they're setting they seem to be betting for the country to fail. They seem to be betting against the stimulus working, almost as if they're rooting for more economic disarray and disaster. At the same time, they're standing up for an ideology of deficit hawks that they completely disregarded for the entire 8 years of the Bush administration, not just through the $1 trillion or more spent in Iraq, but also on the Bush tax cuts. And so now they're standing up for a principle they didn't stand up for before at a time when it's particularly questionable, and they look like complete hypocrites. And I think what we've got here is a southern, regional, largely white, male, aging party that is consigning itself to the margins of American politics. And I don't think that's a good thing for the country. I think we need a serious opposition to any government we have. And these people are drinking their own Kool-Aid. They're behaving like when Newt Gingrich was crying because being in the back of the plane in the Clinton years. And I think it's just going to blow up in their faces. It already is.
We just have 30 seconds. But you also saw this as a media issue, which I thought was really interesting, that the media was actually portraying the stimulus bill vote as a defeat for President Obama, even though it was obviously a victory.
Right. Well, all three networks, not just Fox, all three cable network news networks booked more Republicans than Democrats during the stimulus battle, and then believed that the Republicans were winning. And there's nothing in, let alone the final vote, there's nothing in the polling to show that. And in fact, Republicans in Congress ended up bruised by this much more than Democrats in Congress, let alone the president. So the cable news megaphone can really completely distort reality, which is something we've seen many times before.
By the way, we just found out that the Oscar ratings come out at noon. So,
oh, we'll have to wait to open the envelope then.
And we'll have to talk about it on tomorrow's show. All right, Frank Rich, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing
great
this.
Great talking
us.
To you. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned. Chicoy.